Right, hello and welcome to the 30th and penultimate Manx Footy Pod of the season. Today myself and Disco.
Hi everyone.
Are joined by St George's Giro, Frank Jones and Lee Dixon. Right guys, welcome to Podcast Towers. Thanks for joining us on such a lovely day, you know, giving up your lunch hours. I suppose before we get into this week's day, we should offer a bit of an apology, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we let everyone down last week, didn't we?
You're not cross, you're just disappointed, aren't you?
Very. That's the worst kind of feeling.
Yeah, the three of you that regularly listen, and of course, Daryl and George that, you know, took the time to come in last week. We dropped a bit of a technical clanger last week, so the podcast didn't actually make it onto the air. But it was a good one nonetheless, yeah, wasn't it?
As you said, it's the best one that ever was.
Yes, so. The lost tapes, if we ever managed to recover it. We had a team of technicians working it all afternoon last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Still couldn't find it.
No, it was just a shambles.
It was an absolute shambles. Omni shambles.
Yeah.
Right, boys, we've got you in because we stand on the cusp of a potentially very big weekend for you guys. Victory in Sunday's Hospital Cup final would secure an unprecedented third Grand Slam for St George's. Frank, first of all, what's the mood in the camp? Everyone looking forward to it? Up for it?
Yeah, we've been good. We've been obviously training hard and still doing everything we can possible. This is the kind of time when everyone asks us through the season, are we talking about the Grand Slam, are we talking about the Grand Slam, and we don't actually, we just go one at a time. I know it's easy saying it, but we actually do. But now it is coming to it, it is for the Grand Slam. So, but training's been great, everyone's been getting there, we've got a full squad, so we're looking forward to Sunday.
And I suppose you're talking about it now, you've been in this position before, but are there any nerves? Because there is this extra bit hanging on this one, isn't there?
Yeah, it's hard. We were here a couple of years ago, weren't we, when we played Old Boys, and we were ready for that, and we turned up, and, well, I say we turned up, we were there, and Old Boys steamrolled us, to be fair. They beat us 3-0 on the day, and a few people had bad games, and that's football, though, isn't it? And that's why it's so hard to win the Grand Slam, because one-off day, you're gone.
Yeah.
And that happened a couple of years ago against Old Boys. So I think that'll be in a bit of a pre-match kind of team talk to remember them. But also remember when we beat Peel a couple of years ago to do the first Grand Slam.
Well, Dave, you thought about that before. It was an unbelievable day, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was Peel were leading 2-1 going into injury time, and then Johnny Myers pops up with an equaliser in 6 minutes of added time, and then Callum wins it in the last second, doesn't he?
99th minute.
99th minute.
According to the YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube's 99 minutes to go.
And I suppose, it had to be Peel, didn't it, you know, for this game? I think it's the sixth time you've played them this season or something silly like
isn't
that.
It sixth? Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there all the games because obviously I've been away a lot off Ireland, so I haven't been as involved as I have in past seasons, but Goz has been there all season doing a fantastic job. And to be honest with you, if you were going to win a Grand Slam, you know, and you could pick a team beforehand to do it against, unfortunately it would be Peel, I'm sure, vice versa, if they were in the position and they thought they were going to win one, they would want it to be St George's to win the last game. What you do know is it's going to be an entertaining game and it'll be really competitive up to the final whistle, you know, and if it's going to be a 99th minute winner, I'll definitely take that
one. I was stood quite near to you when that goal went in last time. I think I'm still a little bit deaf.
Of course, you met in the FA Cup final not that long ago. That was an interesting game as well. You know, they had the initiative in the extra time.
Yeah, they were really good. I was only speaking the day before about it. It was a strange old game because I thought we were in control from a lot of the game and we had a lot of the ball and they kind of sat in. But going into football again, they got their chances and they scored and they were beating us 2-1. They scored an extra time and got 2-1 up and we were a bit like, oh, is it going to be another one of these days where we don't? But yeah. The mentality up there, we never give in, and it proved right, and that's the best way to probably win a final when you come that close to getting beat, and it tips the other way and you end up winning.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear what you were saying about how you guys celebrated after that, though, because there wasn't any wild celebrations or anything when you win the first few trophies in the season. As you say, it's all geared up towards the Grand Slam, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard up there because obviously a lot of lads, even before I joined up there, they've won trophies for years and years and years, and the last 7 years we've won quite a lot of trophies. And it is hard because we win the Railway Cup and it's like, oh yeah, we've won the Railway Cup, we'll go for a few beers. Nothing really goes thing, and it's I think everyone's mentality is geared to do the lot.
Yeah.
And if we don't do it, even though a lot of lads won't say it, it is a failure for us, and that's a really high bar to kind of get to.
Yeah.
And we won the FA Cup, look at the way we done that against Peel last minute, and to be honest with you, a couple of us went up the Manx Arms, we had a few beers, and it wasn't nothing major. But hopefully, if we do on Sunday, we'll have a bit of a party.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was just looking back at a few old team pictures today about the celebrations and seeing that, you know, if you don't do the lot, it's a bit of a... And I saw that the year you win a treble, which might have been 13 or 14, the team picture, you know, perfectly nice, but you don't, there wasn't the same emotion as the, you know, the other Grand Slam pictures. And, you know, it's weird how, you know, people will give their right arm to win a treble in Max football, but your guys, your standard's that high.
Yeah, it is really hard, and I don't know, the lads, obviously it's great to win trophies, and if we did only win one early cup, it would be fantastic, you know what I mean? But everyone, no one will say it, but everyone stands and looks at each other. Our aim at the start of the season is to win the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And that's just it. And if we don't accomplish it, it's great to win a treble. Like you say, everyone would love to win one. Even just one trophy, it would be great to win. But that's our bar set that high, and that's maybe why we do so well.
We're going to have to change St George's Day to the day after the hospital. I get a bank holiday for you boys.
Lee, so, you know... This will to win that we've talked about loads of times, is it going to, after this, you know, this is going to make you the unprecedented Grand Slam winners. Is that going to make it harder to motivate the team for next year, or will it just be now we need to get the back-to-back Grand Slams? Is that what will be the end?
I think we say it all the time. I think if you go back to the first one, you want to win the first Grand Slam. Chris, as a manager, even though he'd done it as a player like myself, he wanted to win that as a manager with that group of players, and it had eluded them so many times, and it had been against poor opposition at times in finals where they let themselves down. So you aim at the first one, and it's such a big build-up. Mm. And then we won it in the manner we won it, like we said, against Peel, two injury time goals. And it makes it even more special than what you could ever have imagined because of the situation on that given day. But the minute you won it, it's like Chris straight away said, we've got to get two now. We've got to win it next year again to establish us as being unique.
Yeah.
And obviously we never did it. And then the year after, I don't think we didn't do it again. Then we did do it.
Yeah.
And it was like a completely different experience the second time you do it, completely different. And, you know, and so the minute you win that, we laugh about it, but Chris is like, right, now we need a third one. I think we can get five of these. And he said, in the same sentence, we need a third one. I think we can get five. And he's like, you're only on two, but he's talking about five in the sentence. And that's what he's like. He always said to me, if I can equal Peel six league titles, I will be a happy man and I can walk away from football.
Yeah.
And when we got to the fifth one, he said, I think this team's capable of getting to 10. And I was thinking, we'll only need five now, we'll get another five. And then you start thinking, that's like 5 years of your life.
Your
kids are growing up, your business, and you.
Yeah.
And he's got these wacky mental things in where he drives himself forward, and he just sucks everyone in straight away because no sooner have they won it. And I know people talk about the great managers of the professional game, but Chris is driven like that, his mind thinks like that.
Yeah.
You know, God help his missus at home, because he's always making promises to her, this is what I'm going to do, when I get to this time, I'll walk away, and it really, there's no intention of him. Yeah. I think by the time he gets near 10, if he gets that far, he'd be talking about 15. He is that bizarre, but it does drive the lads on, and if you're within the camp, and Frank Wimshew would clarify this, he just keeps everyone going, and he refreshes with players now and again.
Yeah.
We've had a young group of lads come in, and he's already telling them, if you want to aspire to be them, you're going to have to do the work they do. And so he's already got a new generation trying to buy into how we are. And to be fair, they have done well, haven't they, Frank, this year, these young kids?
They've been
really
amazing,
well.
Them kids this year, to be fair. They come from Union Mills as 15-year-olds, and they've come into our training, and I think they were a bit surprised that they were allowed to kind of come and train with us and be with us. They might see us up like on a pedestal maybe, but they come and the lads crack on with them, and you see the difference in like just 7 or 8 months they've been with us. And I think they've got the attitude now, if we turn up to train and Chris throws the balls on the side and says, you're running, they're not moaning, they're just in, they're running. And if they can keep that mentality, they could just keep going and going and going. And you can, well, a lot of people have seen the likes of Adam Long and people like that have got in our team. Sid Batty's another one. I think he's a great player, or he's going to be a great player anyway if he keeps going the way he's going. And they've got their chance in our first team this year, and Adam scored in the Raleigh Cup final, and I bet you would have asked him 12 months ago, would you be at St George's next year scoring the Raleigh Cup final? He would have just kind of laughed it off, wouldn't he? Wouldn't have known what was going on, really.
So give us an insight to the commitment that's required to be a Grand Slam winner, guys. You know, you talk about it. How many times do you train in a week? Is it because you'll have two with the club, will you, and then potentially more on your own, or what?
I think there's been. I think from when we first arrived, I arrived the same year as Frank. I think when we first arrived, at that given time and the age of everyone, We were training three nights a week all the time.
Wow.
And that probably happened for the first 3 years, really, Frank, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then as the lads started getting to 27, 28, 29, we sort of dipped training off, and it's become twice a week because they're getting a bit older, the injuries and little things, knocks, they're getting families married, etc., etc. But I think there's always been alongside that, you've had Isle of Man training.
Yeah.
The lads sometimes go and play five-a-side on their own, which is good for them because it gets them out of the pressurised situation to enjoy football.
Yeah.
Because it's not always enjoyable when we train, unfortunately. It should be, but it isn't. It isn't always enjoyable. And so I think I've seen a slightly taper off our training in some ways. But you've got lads like now, pre-season, Kiri was doing full yoga sessions with them instead of one of the training nights.
Yeah.
And there's lads doing yoga because that's what maybe they need at this time of stage of their career.
Yeah.
You know, amateur footballers, but the amount of strain they put on the bodies up at Geordie's has been immense for such a long period of time that the likes of Chris are slowing down, Callum, Julian, Sean, Johnny, they've all been there for so long. It's trying to keep that motivation and sort of keep the edge there, but at the same time, make sure that they're conditioned properly. So I've certainly seen a massive change, but on a commitment level, anyone that knows Chris, he will not allow. If anyone tapers off one bit, he's on them. He is straight on top of them all the time. If you don't want to do it, let me know, because I've got lads queuing up to come in who are going to take your place, who want to keep achieving and keep striving. And so there's always that goes on within the camp all the time.
I think he's changed a bit as well, obviously, with the training, because he's seen the age of a few of the lads going kind of forward. So maybe when we first went up, like you said, like six, seven years ago, he was like road running. And it does take its toll on you. Now, he'll still run us, and he will run us if we don't play well or something like that. He'll still run us. But then again, on the flip side, he does take into consideration injuries more, and it's not going to help him on a Saturday if he's got us out road running three times. But then on the flip side of it, like, I've been going down to see Ben Carlin down at the Kenifa, well, the Mifa lads.
Yeah.
They've set up a programme for the Mifa lads, which is a lot of the Geordie's players. We've been down there, so he's letting that kind of go, and it is helping down there with obviously strength and conditioning and things like that, not picking up any knocks anymore to a point. But as the commitment level, he's on your Chris's, and it does take a lot of commitment, and it does take a lot of time. Everyone's obviously got families, wives, kids, you know, businesses.
Very understanding.
Yeah.
And in Chris's mind, all them things come second.
Well, I was going to touch on we had the stat from the FA Cup final. You ran 7.3 miles, was it, or kilometres?
Yeah, it was
miles, was it?
It was miles. It was 11.7
in normal time, wasn't it?
In the 90 minutes, right? I'm training, I'm doing Race to Sun on Saturday, and I'm doing 10.8. I did 7.4 miles, and it took me over an hour and a quarter, something like that. And you did that, obviously, it was stop. And if you, that's amazing. So do you reckon, was that a standout stat from the rest of the team, or was it?
Well, no, I only just had it on because what happened was I contacted Ben, what was it, like 12, 13 weeks ago, and said I was getting little knocks, obviously a bit of age, obviously a lot of training. And I said I could do with maybe getting in the gym, just strengthening up kind of the core. I went down to him, he's been fantastic. He put us a programme all the way leading up to Kenifa and the Ireland Games.
Yeah.
And we just got talking one day, and he said, and I said to him, "What about the vest?" I said, "Oh, them tracker vests would be good."
Yeah.
And he says, "Oh, I've got one if you want to try it." And it's just good. And I had it on in the final, because that was when we kind of talked. It was like a week before the final.
Right.
And I thought it'd be great, but I've wore it since then. Now he's like being kind of monitoring. Like, I wore it for training. I wore it for Russian. I've done a bit more against Russian actually.
Wow.
And the semi. 12.2 or 3.
And it was a hot day, that was.
Yeah. And then against Governors Athletic, I was on for a bit more, but someone hooked me off after 60 minutes.
Good management in that league. You know, saving for the big game.
Well, it's good, obviously, what he's got down there. It's great, you know what I mean? And I think all the MIFA lads now are seeing that kind of side of it as well. You don't have to be out road running at this point. You do need to put the effort in. But this kind of part of the season, it's just ticking over. You've done all your hard work. We're just ticking over and making sure we're conditioned now, ready for, obviously, the big tournaments.
You mentioned that. It's a busy summer for you, isn't it, with two tournaments on the horizon with Kenifa and the Ireland Games. So how does that affect your mentality? Like, if you're going into the Hospital Cup final, and obviously you've got that coming up afterwards, how do you mentally prepare for that as well? Because you obviously want to keep yourself in pristine condition as well for those.
Yeah, like you say, I've been going to Ben obviously for that reason, because I thought of two big tournaments in the summer, I need to be kind of bang on it. But then going back to going in the Hospital Cup final, it's just a massive game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going in, and we won't look at Meath, Kamife, we won't look at the Ireland games. All the lads are focused on Sunday, winning that game. Hopefully we all come out of it unscathed, and then we start training. We've got a friendly next weekend in England for Meath.
Yeah, so that's Salford City, isn't it?
No.
Stockport Town, it's not Stockport Town, it's the non-league version of it.
Yeah.
So slightly lower down.
Yeah, so we'll be away going to play that, and then the week after we go into Kinnifit. You can't kind of, I don't think you can look at trying to save yourself and trying to think, oh, well, I've got this tournament coming up, I've got that game coming up. We've just got to go, if we want to win it, each tournament, you've got to go into each tournament and give it all.
It was funny, when I played rugby, my grief, but yeah, glittering rugby career, and they were always told, you can't not play a full, because a full mentality, as it were, because that's when you get injured, isn't it? Yeah. If you're trying to hold out for tackle or whatever, that's when the injuries come up, so you have to take every game as it. You know, at full tilt, as it were.
Yeah.
So, Lee, you know, obviously, the talk about Kenifa, that's in the sunny climes of Northern Cyprus. Have you had to do anything special with the squad to deal with that? Because it's going to be, I think at the moment, I saw Alex tweeted this week, it's about 21 degrees already, so it's going to be...
I think we're expecting in the mid-20s, 25, 26, and that, and they reckon that'll be at night times, because all the games are going to kick off at 8 o'clock at night, which has been a big help, because in the daytime, it could have been unbearable and dangerous.
Yeah.
From our perspective and the things we've tried to put in place, and I think it's possibly unique in a football sense, that going out there, we're going out there with the biggest backup team we've ever had.
Right.
We've already mentioned Ben Carlin, and we've set in place a programme. We've done some fitness testing on all the lads that were going from 6-7 weeks ago. We ran a bleep test and things to monitor very basic fitness levels, and also let them know they were being monitored.
Yeah.
There'll be another bleep test before we go, and in the meantime, on a strength and conditioning basis, they've been expected to attend the gym sort of twice a week to carry out a specific program that Ben's give each and every individual.
Wow.
They all meet up together, so we've put that in place, which has been a help. On the back up to that, we're also lucky enough that Malcolm's been able to let us bring Ben with us.
Right.
And what he's coming for initially was to deal with the rehydration situation. So we weigh the players in on the way into the changing room every day.
Yeah.
And weigh them on the way out, and it'll give them an idea of exactly what amount of fluids and stuff they need to have, and maybe what kind of foods, the amount of foods and stuff like that. So that's sort of like a bit of a first for us, really, on the basis of the heat and rehydration program we needed. obviously, we've already got Paul, who's the goalkeeping coach, who's been there, Kiri the physio, me and Chris. So team-wise, very well built in. What we've also done, which is really exciting, excuse me, got a stump stuck in my throat. what we've also been able to get now, going off the back of this, starting off with him with this vest, we've actually managed, St George's Football Club have agreed to buy for next season for Chris. Chris came up with this idea that we'd provide every squad member with MIFA with a vest with a tracker in it.
Oh, wow.
And so Ben, it's an exciting project for Ben. Ben's now, we've got the pods, what'll send all the data back to his computer and what have you. Every single player that plays will have information sent back about how far they've covered, how many top-end speed runs at 75% pace, blah, 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 blah. And that's a brand new thing, to my knowledge. It's never been done with a men's football team. St George's are going to have it on board for the whole of next season, for every game. So psychologically, if nothing else, the players will know there is nowhere to hide. I'll have an easy week because we're only playing this team, that will flash up on the statistics straight away about distance covered, how many maybe top-end runs they made for the likes of Frank, maybe the forwards, the wingers. So there'll be nowhere to hide, and St George's is going to let us take this out and trial this whole thing. We're going to have it hopefully for Stockport game as a trial thing for Ben, and we're going to run it when we're out in Cyprus, and it'll be just a new, maybe more of a professional approach sort of going forward, and something, like I said, that we're trying to get it as professional as we can. We're trying to give them the best backup team we can so that when the lads are there, they at least feel like everything's in place, giving them the best chance to do well, because the level of that tournament and the lads who've been know it, it's exceptional. It's beyond, maybe taking aside the actual, the old festival in the summer, the
steam packet.
Taking that aside, it's probably the next highest level of football I think the Manchester players have been involved in.
Higher than the what was the Guinness, the Umbro?
Yeah, game? I think it fits in around then, there, but it's a different style. You're playing against foreign lads, you're playing against French lads, Germans.
Yeah.
All these different styles of their football and how they play it.
Right.
It's of that sort of like Umbro standard, whereas you play in the Umbro, Scotland, Ireland, they all play the same way. Yeah, it's like blood, guts and thunder, smashing each other. It's completely different. And that the challenge of that is more challenging because you're not allowed to touch him. You can't foul. You can't tackle. Yeah. If you jump for a header, it's a free kick.
Yeah.
All these horrible things we don't deal with.
Yeah.
Our lads are having to learn out there. So on an educational level, it's beyond anything that we've ever faced. And, you know, so off the back of Sweden being so good, Hungary not quite, but we was fine margins away from maybe going into getting to the final. Mm. Fell into the wrong side of the draw because of one result and one goal and a missed chance or whatever. So this going over here now with this little bit extra backup in place with Ben doing rehydration and having these trackers and that, hopefully it's just going to move us towards the next level, ready for the World Cup in London next summer.
Right. So Frank, you know, this will be the third major Kinnifer tournament, the last and stuff like that. How do you think we'll get on? I know we've got Pandania in the first, the European champions, aren't they? We've got them in the group. They're obviously going to be marked men, as it were.
Yeah, they're going to be really good. We've just probably had, I don't know if it's a probably bit of good news with something's happened with the County of Nice.
Oh, right.
They can't kind of, they can't make it or something. And Belvedere, which we've played over here, haven't we?
Yeah.
Off-siding for them. So that's going to give us a bit more of a, hopefully, a hope of obviously getting through and qualifying. But going back to what Lee said, is it's such fine margins when you get to that level.
Yeah.
You don't take them chances. And I think in Sweden, a lot, like, we were getting beat 2-0 early on in the first game, and we held on. We ended up winning that game, I don't know how, late on. And the momentum got behind us and everything kind of went for us all. And all that week then, the whole thing just built up. In Hungary, the same kind of decision went the other way.
Right.
And it put us out of the tournament to a point and we missed a chance and we end up getting beat. So going to this tournament, it's just all about fine margins. And like Lee says, they're trying to do everything possible to give us every single chance that we'll do well. Hopefully we get out of the group and get into that kind of semi-finals, and then it's just anyone's then, isn't it? One-off games.
It's a tough schedule though, isn't it? You've got games on the top of games. It's always talked about any form of tournament football, how you rotate your squads and stuff like that. And it leads you feel you've got the squad that you can do that. You know, you can is there an opportunity to rest certain
players? I think in my belief now, I would be confident to say, in bar maybe one, possibly two, and we're waiting on a decision coming back around today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
It will be the best team that's ever gone to a tournament from the Isle of Man. We've been able to get Liam Doyle in from America's flying back. We've got Seamus Yorkey back on board that we never had. It sort of disappeared. He's been injured. And the back Connor Doyle's coming in from Dubai. I think Malcolm's pulled out all the stops, and we have got a sensational squad of players going on the basis that I think our squad's going to be 23 strong.
Yeah.
So we're going to have two players for every position.
Yeah.
I don't think we're taking many out there who would be classed as being weak.
No.
What I do think is we've got three or four lads that might be inexperienced at that level, and we'll not know how they're going to get on until we get there. Because sometimes we've gone over there, prime example was Noxie. We went out there being unsure of him, and he went out there, he's a revelation. Like, you couldn't have explained how good the lad did. And so we're hoping for the same sort of thing off maybe the likes of your Mikey Williams, Dan Simpson, Steve Whitley. These kind of younger lads who have not experienced that yet, we're hoping that when you chuck them in at the deep end on their given day, when they're given their opportunity, that they react in the same way as Noxie did. And so you go into it then knowing that you can call on them any time and they're not going to let you down.
Well, they're going into it on good form personally, aren't they?
Fantastic. What's been impressive with lads like that is their commitment to training. They've come on board and they've took to us and what we're doing. You know, we absolutely know that they won't be found wanting because of their lack of commitment. That's a certainty. And that's been good. But we've got 18 or 19 there that we already know have been at that level. We know that they can perform.
Yeah.
And if on the day everyone clicks together, we know we can compete with teams at that level with this squad.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it exceptional. That there's so many high quality players. They're coming from all over the place. We've managed to suck them all back in. And that's credit to Malcolm Blackburn for making that happen for us.
Yeah.
And I genuinely do believe that we couldn't be good. Barring maybe Callum Morris, who's not able to go for family reasons, I can't see many more players who we could bring in, other than looking towards lads like Dan Hattersley's,
Cummins.
There's lads maybe like that, but even then, the lads coming in, you know, you're not talking about massive differences, and I genuinely believe that, you know. So we're really confident, but we've just got to hope that on the given day when moments arise that we fall on the right side of the fence. And if they do, hopefully we're going to have another great life experience like we did in Sweden.
Well, I've seen the pictures of the hotel. It looks
Now, you talk about squad rotation and stuff, and obviously immediately after that you've got the Ireland games coming up. And I know the manager, Nick Hurt, has talked about this, that last time played a strong team right from the start, and it was allegedly tired by the time that the finals came around. So this time around, starting off against supposedly weaker opposition, he's going to rest players and then bed them in as the tournament goes along. Do you think that's the right way to go about it?
I think going back to Jersey, we just come off the back of Hungary.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the Isle of Man, no disrespect to the whole league, we don't get tight games. Like when we play Peel on Sunday, it's going to be tight. It's going to be hard, really hard. We're not getting that every week. So going to Hungary, I think that set us up perfect for Jersey.
Right.
As in, like, it was close. I'm not saying it was thing, but going over there, experiencing that kind of tournament atmosphere, the pressure of it, playing a hard game every day.
Mm.
We come off the back, we had, I think, 4 or 5 days rest, and we went to Jersey. But if you look how we started in Jersey, we won the first game, I think, 13-0. Everyone was flying.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I think it helped us. Come the final against Guernsey, we were dead on our feet. We were dead on our feet, and they beat us.
They're a good team, though, aren't they?
Yeah, but going back to Lee, I'll tell you about Sweden. We didn't have a tournament before Sweden. We went there, the tournament, when we played County Neath in the final, they were dead on their feet, and so were we.
Yeah.
And it was like a nil, did it end up 0-0, didn't
I
it?
Think it was 0-0, went into extra time.
Went
straight to the penalty.
I think resting players at the start of the tournament, if you can.
Yeah.
But it's a gamble, isn't it?
Well, I think we got Hitcher, haven't we, in the first?
Yeah.
I think we, it's funny you should say 13, I think it was 13-0 last time we played them.
Yeah.
Falklands and Anglesey, or Yvonne,
obviously, if we can rest players, it's going to help anyone, isn't it, through the tournament?
Because it's going to be hot there as well, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Scotland was boiling. I go back to, I think it was 98 we went there, or 99.
Yeah.
I went there as a player.
Yeah.
And we got to the final, and it's still, I tell this even to my family now, it's one of the nicest places I've ever been.
Yeah.
The Ireland, I always said I wanted to go back.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to go back for an Ireland Games, and it fell completely wrong this time. And I was desperate, when I knew it was going to Scotland, I was desperate to be able to go to watch it. I just wanted to go watch an Ireland Games.
Because
I remember being a player over there at the time, and thinking, when I'm older, I hope I can sit up in the stands and watch this.
Because
the atmosphere there, the Ireland Games in general is a fantastic thing to be at. Obviously, the camaraderie and the spirit around the whole place is brilliant. And I wanted to go to Scotland, but I do remember the one thing was absolutely piping hot every day when we were out there. It was unbearable at times. And again, when we got to the final, that we played Inismore, they'd played the day before at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and they won theirs. I think they might have won it 3-0 against Guernsey, I think it was at the time. So they come to the final off the back of a full day's rest, finishing at 2 o'clock. I think we kicked off that night at 8.
Right.
And we went into extra time against Jersey, I think it was. And by the time we finished, it was something like 11:30.
Wow.
We were kicking off at 3 o'clock the next day. And it'd been like 80 or 90 degrees. And I remember we went into the final. We went out to warm up, and no one had any energy. And Keith Luck was trying to get the lads going. And it was like, Keith, no one can do anything.
Yeah.
And I remember going through that game, literally run on an empty the whole game. We got beat 1-0. Never being quite in the game and never really having what we'd showed in the whole tournament. I remember thinking how unfair. Why did we kick off that night? They should have both kicked off at the same time to have the same recoveries. But going out there again, I'm sure, and if they can maximise the opportunity of maybe against the Falkland Islands and Hitra to play the squad right and rest the important players to keep them fresh, then they're going to have a fantastic opportunity. I just hope Scotland don't do what they did in the last tournament out there, because they chipped in a load of professionals from the mainland
right.
and we ended up knocking them out on goal difference because of Hitra.
Right.
I think they beat them 13-1 and we beat them 13-0.
Wow.
So when we went into playing Scotland in the group game, we only needed a draw and it ended up 4-4.
Yeah.
And the referee was cheating. There was about 4,000 people in the stadium booing us. But when the whistle went, when we didn't know this at the time, the whole of the island spun on them, because they said, that's not our team, that's not Scotland. That's a load of lads that live on the mainland who had an association to Scotland. And all of a sudden, they turned against them. It was like, we should have been playing our local players
who
actually live here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I hope when they go over there, but I mean, don't get me wrong, they were fantastic, Scotland.
Mm.
Like one of the best teams I've ever played against for the Isle of Man. I think Nick Hurt will remember that himself because I think we were 3-0 down after 10 minutes.
Wow.
Believe it or not, they were that good.
Wow.
And we were chasing shadows, but hopefully when they go out there, that doesn't happen again to them.
Well, all the Scandinavian islands, you think, could be strong in that because it's effectively a home game. And of course, we brought him up the other week, didn't we? Daniel Sjödlund, he's played for Liverpool and West Ham.
Yeah.
He's eligible for Ireland, so you never know.
his
sister plays for the women's team, I think. She was top scorer a couple of seasons, a couple of tournaments ago.
Did Hattie give you that little nugget of information?
No, he didn't. Wikipedia did.
The actual schedule at the Ireland Games, I was looking at, you just mentioned that, the actual schedule, the semi-finals are on, is it Thursday?
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I think all the games, group games, are on at 5 o'clock.
Right.
Tea time. Because I was actually looking, the semi-finals at 5, and then if you don't win, the third place playoff is 11 in the morning. And then the finals at 1.
So you're not getting,
whatever happens, you're not getting 24 hours, are you?
No.
And as long as both teams get the same rest, and you fall on the wrong side of the George, your problem.
Going back to Jersey, I'll always remember, we went to our hotel's around the corner from the main stadium, and we went to watch the semi-final off Jersey, Guernsey and Menorca.
Yeah.
We got there, and Guernsey had rest, I think, four of their first team, like real good players, and they gambled on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Menorca didn't win. They got a man sent off in the end. They end up Guernsey.
Standard.
Guernsey stumbled through to the final. We had our full strength team in the semi final.
Yeah.
We had all week because the way the games had fell. Yeah. So next thing, you're in the final and you're playing against Guernsey, who've got maybe the four players that have had the Wednesday off and the Thursday off. And in a tournament like that, if you're having 2 days, you've even noticed 1 day's rest is massive for anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've had 2 days rest. And I think in tournament football, it's a bit like that. It's, you've got to gamble. If it pays off, it's great. The Guernsey manager end up winning gold because of it. But if they would have got knocked out in that semi-final, because I think a lot of people would have said, well, why didn't he play? Why didn't he play? Why didn't he play?
Well, it happened to us in the other way. The games I was at 2011, I think we ended up finishing 7th or 9th or something like that. And I think because of the selections, gambles didn't work in that instance. But as you say, when it does come off, it pays off big time. Because... But Guernsey have just won the Moratti, it was a couple of weeks ago, they beat Jersey 2-1.
Jersey, it's an important thing. I think they've took the upper hand in that, to be fair now, Guernsey, since they've gone into that professional league and the players are now exposed to that, like Frank said, what we don't get every week, close games, hard games in non-league football. I think they've really took the upper hand in that now, Guernsey, and it's becoming a less important tournament for them because they've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
And B, I think the level of competition there every week, I think they've got another gear now
that
Guernsey maybe don't quite have. I know they're trying to get into your way for at the minute.
Jersey are.
If they get that, it'll really change the outlook of football down there.
It'll change the dynamics, obviously, down there. Guernsey, I think they were near the bottom of their table. I think they stayed up in the end. Ross Allen, who scored against us in the final, he was their danger man. He went travelling halfway through the season, came back for the last month, and I think he may have fired them to safety. So he'll be the danger man if he goes to Gotland.
It'll be interesting because we played Guernsey a couple of years ago in Gibraltar, and they had a load of kids. Mm. And then we played them in the Ireland Games, and they had obviously a real good team.
Yeah.
So you just don't know, and that's like anyone, isn't it? You look at the group now in the Ireland Games, and you think, oh yeah, it's easy, we can rest this, we rest. You just really don't know what you're up against, do you?
No, and I think a lot of it's commitments as well, isn't it? We've talked about it with both squads you guys are involved with. But people travelling to Gotland can't necessarily do that, especially if they've been putting the equipment in the Guernsey have. You know, they're travelling off island every week or every other week, maybe for a midweek game as well. Occasionally. Yeah. So
it's a big commitment, isn't it?
Yeah, it might get to the end of the season and then they say, actually, I can't, not go into Gotland for a week as well.
So. And on a cost basis for them, I know when they play in the league all year, some of them, most of them will be getting paid money. But going up to the Ireland Games, it might not be free, and they certainly won't be getting paid to go.
No.
And so you start asking lads who are getting paid a couple hundred, 500 a week, whatever they're on, to hand over £800 or whatever it ends up being. You get a different outlook all of a sudden, like you said, on commitments. They're thinking, I've had a long, hard year. I need to go away with the family on a family time.
Yeah.
So actually, the Ireland Games could take a backseat, and the likes of Guernsey could go there a lot more under strength than they do when it's only a hop over to Jersey.
To that tournament. Exactly.
You mentioned UEFA. Just quickly, I just want to see, what was your reaction when it was decided in the vote not to proceed with looking into joining UEFA?
There could be a million things said about it, and I haven't... I've listened to it all. I've heard everyone's perspectives, and I've not really got too involved because I've had a lot going on myself with my daughter and all that. And the one thing, my point of view would be on it, believe the FA... who in my eyes will do anything to avoid it, and that's their choice.
Right.
You listen to people who've been behind this campaign 55 who will tell you about facts and figures about the millions that's on offer, and you can believe that, and that's fine. The one thing I'm absolutely horrified about as an Ireland, and everyone who voted on this should either be ashamed or not, that the Isle of Man Football Association are not willing to look into doing it. No one's asking them to do anything. They're asking them to put together a group of people that will just look into it. And then maybe 2-3 years down the line, they'll decide, yes, let's have a vote on it, or no, we're not even having a vote on it. And that, they can say, that's what we've done.
Yeah.
But to shut the door and say, we are not even looking into it, I think is negligent on their part, because they oversee football. It's ran through the English FA. It's funny how the English FA are like being connected to UEFA and taking all their money. But we are governed by them, who dictate and tell us exactly what we will and won't do and when we do it. Which, there's a million things behind that, this farcical, about people playing up in ages, trying to improve the standard within our little catchment area that they don't allow us to do. To not even look into it, I am absolutely gobsmacked. It infuriates me to think that the people who sit there, and some of them are my friends, and I've got no issues personally with them, on the basis of governing football, they want to be ashamed of themselves.
What are you, Frank? Any?
I'm kind of saying, to be honest with you, I don't really get too much involved in it all. You kind of hear bits from the good points, the bad points, and I don't know all the facts, you know, I don't know all the facts, the figures, and all that kind of stuff. But going back to what Lee's just said, for them not to even kind of put a group of people together to look into it, like, I don't see the harm in that. I don't see any harm in a group of people looking into it, then coming, sitting in a conference room and saying, this is all your good points, that's all your bad points, and then we vote and we say, no, we're not going for it, or yes, we are. But at the minute, I think there's that many people out there that don't know enough about it. Like myself, you kind of, you, from one side you hear all the good points, from the other side you hear all the bad points, and you're not getting somewhere in the middle lie all the facts, the proper facts.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, I think both of you hit the nail on the head. I think what happened, obviously they've said the FA have said that they'll wait and see what happens with Jersey, but I don't think that's going to be a quick process either, especially if it goes through the court of arbitration.
I think if you're putting a panel of people together, all you have to do, you just have to get maybe a lawyer, a policeman, an accountant, maybe four or five independents alongside four or five football people, whether that's a couple from the FA, maybe a referee, someone from the referee society, and a couple of club reps who are quite well respected, and put together a panel of 10 people that has a really good overview of it and can come back and say, these are the facts now. This isn't, there's no more conjecture. Go, this is the facts. Yeah. This is the good and bad, like Frank said. Bang, this is what do we think now? And then give people a chance to vote.
Yeah.
They've given people a chance to vote on nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what, it doesn't make sense to me. On an island that's meant to be, the FA like to bang on about transparency all the time. People want to put money in, well, let's be transparent. Well, let them be transparent. That's what I would say. Then be transparent. Let's see who voted in that meeting, or let's see whether there was a vote even taking place. And again, these are only things I hear. Was it ever voted on properly? Were people given the facts of what they were actually voting on? I don't know, but let's get this big word out that the FA loves so much across the English FA into the transparency goes for everyone, not just the people who are at the top of the tree pointing the finger. Everyone needs to be transparent on it, and that's what I would love to see. A panel of 10, maybe five independents, nothing to do with football, five football people from across the key shareholders, whatever they want to call them, and get them together and do that. Put the information together properly in such a manner that there's going to be no one trying to tilt the seesaw and say, this is really how the land lies. And that would be the minimum I would expect of being involved in men's football.
I don't, like, going back to what I think, I don't really know the full facts and figures about it all and how you apply and how you think. But looking at, obviously, Jersey, you've got the ball in motion. They'll probably fail at a few hurdles, and then they'll reapply, and then they'll fail at a few more and reapply. If we had a group of people following Jersey's route, surely when they actually get in, we'd follow suit behind them, and then maybe two or three or four hurdles that have stopped them, we'll know about them, so we won't go the same route, and we could just maybe follow in behind Jersey, because surely we're exactly the same as them.
Well, I think it's all going to depend on what UEFA's stance on the thing. We saw when Gibraltar went in, they changed the rules again, and they tried to shut it down again. Kosovo have got in since then, and now obviously Jersey are trying. It depends on I can't remember the guy that's in charge UEFA at the moment, but he's always been trying to encourage membership growth and stuff like that. It depends if they look at tiering it, as you guys have heard.
I think
the
tiering will come in. I think what they'll do is they'll start to have World Cup qualifiers for World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah.
I think you'll have smaller nations around the world, very similar to what CONIFA are trying to do now. These smaller nations, countries, independents, whatever you want to call them. I think you'll find that eventually they'll have to open the doors to places like the Isle of Man, Jersey, Guernsey, all them ones. Gibraltar might drop off into that one.
Yeah.
And they'll have like their own little World Cup within it to get the best 5 out of maybe 20 that can go into the World Cup qualifiers. Yeah. But the main thing is, and the one thing I have seen facts of, are the amount of figures involved in world football. I am convinced that the Isle of Man's best in rather than out. Because you're talking millions. You're not talking getting given 130,000 and getting dictated to on every level of every day, of every week, of every year, you're talking about getting an awful lot of money. Yes, you need to employ more people. Yes, the overheads become greater. But in terms of developing the Isle of Man and facilities in football, there's no way in the world I don't see a bad side to that.
Yeah,
I'm sure there is bad sides to other bits, but I think UEFA and FIFA from above them will start to control that element better. And I think that sooner or later, because of like the jersey and what they're doing, it'll naturally be a little pocket to fall into, and it won't be impossible to get into UEFA, but it won't be the old UEFA.
They'll
keep you away from the top of there unless you earn the right to get there.
Rugby and cricket do at the moment. Yeah. You see the likes of Georgia playing World Cup rugby, and they've obviously had to go through a qualifying process to earn the right to play with the top table, as it were. Right, we could go on and talk about this all day, guys, but we better crack on. And before we delve into the murky world of this week's Twitter questions, Dave, you caught up with Brad Management duo Will Smith and Mick Eggerty after Sunday's Gold Cup win, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a hard-fought game for them. They came from 1-0 down against Duncan to win 3-1, and I spoke to both of them, obviously delighted to complete the treble. Special mention to Mick Eggerty, he scored the winner for Braddon on Wednesday night, didn't he?
Yeah, so Lee, you know, assistant manager coming on and scoring the winner, you know, fancy that on Sunday?
I don't think my legs would carry me, to be honest with you.
Well, we'll have a listen to what these guys had to say now.
Congratulations, guys. You completed the treble. I spoke to you a few weeks ago when you won the Wars Cup and you said it was the start of the jigsaw. You've done it.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. It's about 3 years in the making. Yeah. A lot of hard work. I think of all the performances we've had, it was a great game because I thought we were in control for the whole game. And to go to the goal down, we're a bit gutted that the lads showed the character they showed all year.
Well, as you say, it was a hard game. I mean, it happened against Castletown in the Woods Cup final. You went a goal down, but you got the equaliser before half-time, and that proved the difference, I think. And then, obviously, two quick-fire goals settled any nerves. But it was, what players stood out for you guys? I mean, it was a good team effort, but were there anyone that really...
I think for me, Connor Dempsey definitely returned to form today. Like, he's been a bit hit and miss like the last few weeks, but really today looked back to his old quality.
I would say Connor was really good, but he's been brilliant for us all year. Joe Andrews. He's just a first division player at the minute, playing in the second division, and I think he'll surprise a few next year when he goes up.
And also, the centre midfield as well. Like, they worked so hard, Mark O'Neill, Jamie Delaney.
They're very hard working all over the pitch. It doesn't seem like you're carrying any single player. I actually spoke to Lee Kira before the game, and obviously he tore his hamstring the other day,
On Wednesday, which he missed out.
And he said, you know, he doesn't mind missing. I mean, obviously he wanted to play, but you know, he didn't want to be carrying any players at all. No. The whole team needs to be working hard, and that was the case.
And I think that spirit, I mean, I said to Mike when we first started off, I said, first and foremost, you've got to make it a great club before you become a great team.
Yeah.
And I said, when we were losing heavily 3 years ago, we made it a great club. And you can see with the lads that's come in and filled in for players over the whole season, it's been a great, great atmosphere in the whole club.
Yeah, you can see that. It's palpable. And you see how together the team is on and off the pitch. But you mentioned Joe Andrews before. I mean, I think he did it in the World Cup final as well. He got the equaliser then, didn't he?
Lee Corrie did, actually.
But either way, that header from Joe, it set the tone. It was a cracking header, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then second half, Stu Pacey had a great game. So it was all around, it was good. But so going forward now, obviously promoted, completed the treble. What do you sort of take into next season? Because it's a fresh start in a way, but you want to carry that momentum, don't you?
I think the biggest worry for next season was how do you replace Andy, who was always going to retire. But I think losing him for the last few games sort of forced our hand. We've had to try some different things. I'm Stu's an ideal replacement there, Stu Pacey.
Fantastic player.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, people say, you know, you've got to bring in players and all this. I mean, they're a young side still, and then I don't think they're at the best. I think by playing in the first division regularly, they'll push on and they will get better. Yeah. I always said when we went up, we'd be ready to go up.
Yeah.
And I believe we've outgrown the second division now, so we're ready to go.
And I think as well, I mean, I think we mentioned after the World Cup final, but you look at Douglas Athletic, and they went up and they lost Connor and Wolfie.
Yeah.
And yet they still, they came together as a team and they pushed on and they stayed up.
Yeah.
And you only lose one player in that sense. You guys have got a really good team around you, so there's no reason why you can't stay up next year.
We've got players to come in there, Ben had been in and out of the team, Ben O'Neill, and he's come in. He's ideal to play like that number 10 role. So him and Stu have worked really well. And there's other players as well. Kyle coming off the bench. He's been brilliant. So.
All around a great day. So congratulations, guys.
That's
good luck next year.
Cheers.
Right.
Thanks,
guys.
Right, guys, welcome back. We're still joined by Lee and Frank for the 30th and penultimate Manx Footy pod of the season. We've got the usual raft of Twitter questions, haven't we, Dave?
We have. We'll start with Tony Sewell, who obviously you guys went up against his Governors Athletic side recently. He was obviously full of praise for you, for the team. But he asks, what do you think is the best grass pitch on the Isle of Man, and do you prefer playing on bigger pitches?
Yeah, it all depends when you play on the grass pitch, isn't it? You know, like through the winter, they're all kind of thing. And then this time, kind of part of the year, like we played up Douglas Royal in the semi-final last week, and it was like playing in like a school playground. It was that hard.
Yeah, it's like cricket, wasn't it?
I think, I'm not just saying this because I play up there, St George's pitch for us as players and a team, I think it's the best pitch because it's well looked after, it's big, it suits the way we play. So I'd have to say St George's.
I'll go against that. I'll say the best pitch on the Isle of Man now for by quite a long way. And there's very, very few weeks we've played on it where it hasn't been exceptional is now Corinthians.
Right.
I know the amount of time they put in. I know the people that are up there. They're up there every night of the week.
Yeah.
The amount of care and attention to taken on it. I think if you go back, I think it was last season, Frank, we went up there and we were the two top teams in the league. I think we beat them 10-1 or something.
Mm. Yeah,
we played on the pitch that day and it was like, it was as good a football pitch as I've ever seen on the Isle of Man.
Right.
It has a bit of a slant on it, but the actual surface for flatness and the way the grass was cut, I've never seen anything like it on the Isle of Man. And unfortunately that day, it was definitely the wrong team for them to be playing when it was in that condition because we absolutely took them apart. And I'm not being disrespectful, and the lads there knew it. But that pitch for me, I was up there last night with my daughter training, and they've let me use it for Ella until it gets this overseed done. Yeah. And I went up there and my daughter looked at it and went, wow, that's incredible. It was at this stage of the season to be in the condition it's in.
Yeah,
it was phenomenal. And I would go now and say on a surface basis, that's well ahead of everything else on the Isle of Man at the moment.
And the bowl, you know, I saw the Junior Cup on Friday and Saturday, Junior Cup final. The bowl was sticking a bit. It looked like it hadn't been watered for a while. It's getting a bit dry. You know.
It's a difficult pitch to play on. It's hard on the joints. If you ask the lads after final, certainly after the Peel game, the one thing all our lads said is their joints the next day, all over their body, were aching them because it's quite a hard pitch.
Yeah.
But on a dry day, it can be a nightmare to play on. You know, there's much enjoyable about it, Frank, is there, when it's hot and dry?
No, I was just about to say what you said there. Since, like, it's a great surface, great kind of pitch facility, but I have noticed every time we do play on it, my joints, my knees and my hips really, really suffer the next day. And the dryness of it, I was talking to one of the lads on Tuesday at training, and it was Pekka. And we were saying about, I hope it rains on Sunday, just to give that a bit of zip, because you end up getting catching it under your feet. And I always say, obviously, kind of being a plumber, I look at, like, the river runs right past. I don't know why, when they done the facility, didn't they have, like, a pump from the river into a filter system.
Yeah.
And then you could just turn a tap on, and the sprinklers, you've got all the water in the world there.
I think it was to do with the filter system and the cost, because I was speaking to Colin McMullen when he worked there, and he was saying about the algae in the water.
Yeah.
It's so hard to siphon out, to filter through,
right.
Because you start spraying it, and if there was any problems with that filter system went wrong, you'd get greenery.
Yeah.
And once it's in, the only way you can get it out is to take all the rubber out and completely disinfect the whole thing. And I think on a complication basis, it was too much. It was just too high risk.
Well, we saw how long it was out of action when it flooded. Man, that was its similar problem with the contamination.
It's just a big health and safety thing, isn't it? Probably, but like you say, it takes some water to obviously kind
spray
of wear it, to
time,
spray it down, to spray it all the time. But if it could be possible,
it would be,
it'd be
no
a great surface
about,
every time. You don't know what you're getting one day to the next if it's dry or wet.
Well, you mentioned Ellie. I suppose you give us a bit of an update. How's she doing?
She's okay. She's had a bit of a difficult time this season. She had 14 odd weeks off with a concussion from about October, which was hard for her because she couldn't do anything, and I mean nothing. She wasn't even allowed to stretch or... So that was difficult. And then she just got back going again and she started to do really well, getting her confidence back. And she twisted her ankle in training, was told to carry on training. They didn't think there was anything up for 2 or 3 weeks. And eventually I was advised by Paul Jones to go and get an MRI scan in England. And we went over, got a private MRI scan done, and it showed a tear to her cartilage and ligament damage in her ankle. Yeah. So that was an absolute disaster. And she spent sort of the best part of about 7-8 weeks in her boot. She's been out of the boot now for sort of four and a half weeks, and so the season's just finished 2 weeks ago. She's just trying to get back going again, and so she's going to have an overrun into the summer now, which isn't really going to stop. And what Man United have said is they're wanting it to go back, and on a basis of a month to 6 weeks trial next season to see how she's got over her injury and how she is in mentally. And
yeah,
they took a kid on last year who'd been injured all season the year before, thinking they were doing her a favour, and it actually never worked for them on any level. Right. It didn't help the girl because she hadn't got over it psychologically or physically, and it never helped them. And so they want to go back on that basis. On the other side of the coin, Tia, who was over there with her, Tia's been fantastic. She sort of built in from starting last season, sort of maybe down the pecking order with not much expectation. She's built in over the season, and I think she finished top scorer to you.
Wow.
She's been fantastic. As the season went on, she got better and better with her goal scoring. Yeah. She's become a really integral part of the team, won the first choices on the team sheet, and they've asked her to go back on a contract again next season. So hopefully for Ella, things will pan out. She's going to go trial at a couple of clubs because she can, in girls football. So she's hoping to go to City and Liverpool and go through their trial process. I don't know how in the women's, but even if you've been offered a contract, they can't stop you doing that in terms of withdrawing contracts. So Ella wants to do that anyway, and worst case scenario, she will go back to Man United at the start of next season for pre-season, hopefully in better condition with the ankle sorted. But touch wood, her training's going very well at the minute, and so I'll keep my fingers crossed she stays injury-free over the summer and she's ready to sort of prove maybe what she didn't have a chance to prove next season.
And how have you found the travelling? It must be such a massive commitment. I know you said something before, you missed quite a lot of Saturdays.
Yeah, I'll speak on behalf of me and Wayne. We go into it and you know you're going to be away two or three nights a week.
Wow.
From the first 8 weeks of the season, we were going away on a Monday afternoon, back Tuesday morning for school by 9:30. Wednesday afternoon, back for a Thursday morning. Friday night, back Sunday tea time. So we're away four nights a week for sort of the first 8 weeks of last season because we wanted to give them the best chance to integrate into the squad and not miss any training, any games. So we did that, and it was, they're not going to lie, the adrenaline got us through 8 weeks and you think it's okay. Then Man United, the season started, and they said you can just do the Wednesday and the weekends now because they train Sunday morning. So when you played Saturday, you have to stay over to train on the Sunday morning. They do a load of sort of like foam roller stuff. It's all about the sort of trying to get them the recovery side of things. So we got into that there, which should have become a lot less hassle. And to be honest with you, as the season went on, it got harder and harder. And no matter what you think going into it, and I'd never advise anyone not to do it because of the opportunity you're providing for the kids and whatever. But there's no way would I ever also advise them to go in thinking it'll be just okay. Because the difficulties that there, delays, cancellations, and going over there, we've been over when there's been games cancelled once we got there, we're there for nothing. It's been difficult, it's been tiring. Obviously, you try to run a business, you've all the rest of your family. It's been hard for me and Wayne, you know, and we spoke about it throughout the season. I think we've tried to keep each other going. We haven't, you know, at times we've had other family members that have jumped in and helped us with various things, but cost level really difficult. We've had fantastic people who've come on board on a sponsorship basis. The most recent one was Conister. Oncombe Football Club, where the two girls played, were lucky enough to help them out. We were lucky to get sponsorships in off, we had Keystone Law, Jill Christian was amazing, and B&B Furniture, amazing. Andrew Campbell up at Kirby, fantastic. We just had people all the way along who've just been amazing, willing to give and help this opportunity, this fantastic opportunity. So to all them people, this is a great opportunity for me to thank them. And obviously, if they're lucky enough on Ella's basis to do it again next season, and Wayne is going to, you know, the challenges will start all over again. Whether I'll have recovered or not is another story.
I hope you're getting air miles, Lee. All this is off island trips.
I could be going over to Fiji for a month. Air miles was done.
Right, next question from Paul Jones. Bit of a backstory to this, but I will always remember when Dicko and I lived together in Stockport. Not because I want to, but no matter how many psychoanalysts I see, I can't erase the memory.
Well, let me just say that all the time I spent with Jonesy, I thought I had a lot of problems because I'd been released by Carlisle United, and I was obviously on the sort of rejection side of gone into non-league and whatever. And we were, I was at Buxton and Winsford and Staley Bridge, a load of clubs around there, sort of bouncing around non-league as you tend to, trying to find your feet again. And I lived with Jonesy, and I thought I had problems until I spent some nights in the bedroom with him talking to him about how he felt. And to be honest, from the day I moved, I never looked back. So I'd just like to thank Paul for putting things into perspective, how good I actually was.
Right, and his actual question is, to both of you, this is, if you could change one thing about Manx football to improve it, it could be quality, competition or enjoyment, what would it be?
Start off for you, Frank.
I think going back to what we talked to before about the competition of playing harder teams and better teams. I think the going back to the old thing of three leagues. So it was like the end of last year when we played Peel three times in a week. It's great, you know, that's the kind of games that you need to be playing. And I think it's got to go that way. I think it's not as easy as just, oh, let's just go three leagues. I know it's not that simple. But I think that would help a lot of teams. It would save people getting beat by teams 15, 16 nil, 17 nil, you know. So, and it'd help the competition when all the big teams obviously play each other. One of the other things I would change, and we always talk about it, and I think we talk about it a lot because we're in a lot of the finals, is the dates of the finals.
Right.
Like, obviously the Railway Cup final's good.
Yeah.
It's on Boxing Day, so you get to go out afterwards and you can kind of celebrate it. The FA Cup final, everyone has Easter, all Easter off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we go and win it against Peel. A lot of people we always touched before that are against the Manx Arms, but everyone had to go home because everyone's got work. They've had like 4 days off. So, and I don't know how you change that. Or
well, you know, I thought, I have to get your opinion both because if you're involved, I thought Bella Fletcher last year, the Super Sunday worked really well with the two games next to each other, and potentially that's something they could do. Woods Cup first, FA Cup maybe on the Easter Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. Just so, I think it just needs to change from. I think it all stems back, or what I've heard, it all stems back to when it used to be like an Easter festival of football. So you'd have games on the Friday, games on the Saturday, games on the Sunday, and the FA Cup would be the pinnacle on the Monday. But now there's not much happening all through the weekend. So the lads are waiting all weekend. Come the Monday, if you do win, what do you have to miss another day off work?
Yeah.
And the same again with this week coming.
With the Sunday.
It's a Sunday game. Why not play on the Saturday?
Yeah.
Or if they want it on a Sunday, keep the thing. I know it's waiting another week, but it's bank holiday weekend next weekend, isn't it?
Yeah,
the bikes are starting.
Yeah.
So that's maybe why it's not that weekend. But it's bank holiday weekend next weekend, or play it Saturday this week. We're going to win it on... Or I hope we're going to win it. on Sunday, the odd player might miss out on having a few beers because they can't get the day off work. Yeah. And obviously with two big tournaments coming up in the summer, there's a lot of players taking a lot of time off work already.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think one thing, I go back, I had a little dig at the FA before. One thing I'd like to say is I think Tony Mettam should be congratulated for the Super Sunday. I thought it was fantastic. I've always been a massive fan.
Brilliant.
And I spoke to Tony for a few years when they were considering about it, and I said, I can't see a downside to it.
No.
Because if I was a fan, I would love to have stood on that bank between the two pitches and watched both games unfold.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Especially if you get two really close games that may have gone into extra time or penalties.
Mm.
Why wouldn't you want, as a football fan, to stand and watch the four supposed best teams?
Yeah.
It's not always going to work like that, but it may. I'm standing and watch that happen. Who wouldn't want to? So I think that was a fantastic success. I hope he does it again next season. I know he got a lot of stick at the time for it, people, but on the Isle of Man, you're always going to get people whinging no matter what you do.
Yeah.
But I think from a football perspective alone, I thought it was a really good spectacle what they did. So well done to them on that one.
Yeah.
I go back to the I agree on the, I'll say competition would be the thing that I would change to be more competition across the board. And I'll link into the next part of the questions. I think going into it, I think part of that sort of level of competition, what again, I'll go back to what I referred to earlier, the English FA have a massive part to play in this, because I think on the Isle of Man, it's imperative that lads, once they turn 14 and they're physically ready, that they are allowed to play in senior football, because I was allowed to do it. I started when I was 14 years old, and I know how much that improved me playing combination football and being able to get on the bench at 14 and 15 at Paul Rose United, who were the best team on the island at the time. And I know how much that brought me on, and I know the advantage it gave me when I went over to Carlisle on trials and Leeds and all the teams, Stockport. When I went over there, I'd already played men's football, and so that little step up, the physicality side of it and the aggression side and that helped me massively.
Mm.
We now take that away from the kids and say you can't do it till 16. They're losing a massive, massive part of their development.
Mm.
And I know last week when Gregor Rioch was on the Isle of Man, he was saying about how good it had been for Adam in the short space of time, the 4 or 5 months he's had where he could play senior football. They spoke about how they could see that. Their lads don't get that opportunity in England, but they wish they could.
Yeah.
And he said for him, that was like the best thing we utilised, but we could be doing that 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
We could be helping. It doesn't have to be everyone. Again, go back to, you can have a very small panel of 2 or 3 people that understand about the technical aspect, the physical aspect, and them things, who could go around and say, let him do it, don't let him do it, or let him have a trial period of a month.
Mm.
They're struggling, he's too small, take him out for a while till his next birthday.
Yeah.
they're easy things. We live on an island. That's not complicated to do that. Mm. You know, and if then people are genuinely about football, they'll make the right decisions for the kids and for the teams. But I would definitely, definitely have that would be my main point of improvement. I think I know my daughter now, go back to Ella. She's now 15 years old. I know she could go to the Island Games. I know she could. Yeah. And I know Quilly wanted to take her auntie.
Yeah.
They can't go because the English FA say. That right. to me is wrong. You can have an athlete who can go and run the 100 metres at 12 or 13 because they're quick enough.
Yeah.
Our daughters are good enough, but they can't go because the English FA have decided, in their wisdom, that that's not a good thing. But well, that's rubbish. It is a good thing for their development.
Yeah.
And it would be a good thing for the Isle of Man football team. And I'm not putting anyone down who's in it, but I think they would enhance the squad going out there. But when Tony Meppham asks Mark Hardcastle, no. That's a straight no. And that's, I go back to how they wag their finger and tell us, they don't think about the Isle of Man. They're not bothered. They give them the money and you do as you're told and that's it. Now, that's the side I would love to get away from. Mm. Why I think maybe that I'm more edged towards UEFA than that. And it's only because of the people at the English FA. Mm. I'm not having a dig at Tony because I know there's been numerous occasions where he's tried to use his common sense. He's been and asked questions and said, why can't we do this? And I know he's banging his head against the wall.
Mm.
But go back to that there. We should have dispensation on an island to control the things that help us. I probably banged on the radio about this the other week when I was up there with Greg Arioch and Alice Gibson and Adam Long. It's vitally important for the future of our kids to give them a chance to get into football clubs. We can massively help them if we are willing just to bend and tweak a little bit to help the situation.
Frank, when did you start? Were you 16 when you started playing senior football, was it?
Yeah, I think it was actually. I think it was, it just kind of changed, I think, maybe. Yeah. And I was just kind of...
That whole league changed a few times, 14 to 16 and stuff like that, you know. And obviously now it's under 16 to 18, isn't it? And so it's all that pre-ground has changed so many times. And it always seems to have struggled in the last few times.
Just touching on what Lee said about the age thing. And I think if you look at them 15-year-olds that come last year from Union Mills to... And I'm only talking about them because I've seen them firsthand. Mm. I think putting them in an environment with us, training with us at 15, and then they kind of filtered through from the start of the season to now, they've near enough all got through, bar two or three, I think, that now are playing senior football. But I think when they've all been training with us, you can see that development without even playing on a Saturday in men's football, training with us twice a week, you can see it's a no-brainer that it's developed them so much.
Probably helps when they score on their debuts as well.
A couple of them did, didn't they? Yeah, there's a fair few of them.
Well, Paul adds, you've already touched on it, Lee, that one thing would you suggest happens to improve the quality of our young players and keep them in the game after the age of 15? And that's what you're saying we should do.
I think we're losing kids at 16, 17 now that you never lost before.
Well, we talked about this, actually. I think, I can't remember what we were talking about. One of the many podcasts we've done now, but we said there's more competition than ever, sports-wise.
I agree with you that 100%, I do. I think if you get kids in, though, at 14, and you expose them to that environment, and they go in and realise that they're playing men's football, and it becomes a proper challenge, not where you can turn up, go through the motions like they do sometimes with their teams and win 12-13-0. Yeah. They're now in real men's football, where if you win 4-1, that's a big margin, that's a good result.
Yeah.
But generally, you're going to get really hard games. You're going to get games where you definitely lose. Mm. You're going to get games where you win and draw. You learn all the different aspects that you might not have learned through kids football because you might have always been the best team. And I think that makes it intriguing for a kid. I think the natural human instinct in them comes out of that competitiveness of, I'm going to keep pushing now.
Yeah.
They lose that for them years, and these kids at Union Mills who come to us were winning all the time. They come up there. Yes, they're still winning on Saturdays and Sundays in the leagues they play in, and they did to a degree in the Cal Cup, but they're coming to training and they're not always winning.
No.
They're not their best players. They're not the fastest. They're not the strongest. It's brought something out new in them that you start to see now. Everyone could have that opportunity if they could play football, and it might keep them interested at 16, 17, 18, 19, where they've started to lose them for the Cal Cup, and they've now made it into an under-21 scenario or whatever it is, because now it's like, well, we need to open up to that to get teams out there.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
No.
Every team on the Isle of Man had a Cal Cup team. It was the biggest competition at the end of the year. Now it's like an afterthought. I'm going down to watch it, and I'm like, where's all the teams? Why haven't we got them? Teams going, well, we're not going up there to play them. We'll forfeit the game because they can't be bothered. Now, there's another story behind that. Again, it's something I get on my high horse about. Kids are brought up now in the computer world. They can win FIFA, whatever it is, whatever number they're up to, and they can be fantastic sitting in front and feel like champions. and they've actually never left the couch.
Yeah.
You know, when I was young, I spent all my nights and days out with a football, running around the streets, not always up to good, but I was out running and getting fresh air and being healthy and kicking a ball around, and kids don't do that now. You go into every park, every field, it says no ball games. You couldn't make it up. You know, you say to a kid, where do you go to play football? They couldn't give you an answer. So they can only do structured football, and it's actually not very good for them.
No.
You know, street football, I heard an interview of Harry Redknapp once, saying in London, every street would have 20 games of football going on down, going across the way, and it'd be hitting windows and doors, and people just got on with it. Now, kids aren't allowed to play football anywhere. You know, and I think it's made a generation of kids that actually spend all the time staring at televisions and computer screens. And so when you get them up, and actually it's windy and it's muddy and it's cold in the winter, they actually can't be bothered. They can go and, you know, they're 17, 18, they go down to Jackson, sitting there and watch Liverpool or Man United or Everton or Man City, whoever their team is. You can watch them now in a pub on a Saturday. So it's easier to go and sit there than it is to go and get cold and wet and muddy, because actually they've never had to work and be challenged in anything before.
I assume you're not going to approach EA Sports for sponsorship then.
FIFA pulley. Right, go on, and Dave. What a way to finish.
Actually, you can ask this one, because I've got another one for Frank after this.
Oh, okay. Joe Andrews, our regular contributor, obviously goal scoring. He scored last night as well, didn't he?
He did. Equaliser, yep.
If you had a tash, would you choose Vinnie Dales or Pip Cowans? So we'll start with you, Lee.
I'd go for Pip Cowans. He's got a lot more to offer than Vinnie on a football level. And also, he works in behind the bar at the Legion, so if I ever go in there and need any cheap or free drinks, I know I'll get it off him.
He lambasted me the other day standing at the bar in the Legion. I'd forgotten that as the cardinal sin.
Vinnie Dale wouldn't come and fix your roof or paint your bedroom for free, I can assure you that.
Frank?
I'm going to have to go for Pippers too, and it's only one reason is... Vinnie Dales is fake. He uses some scar on it to make it look the colour it does. And I know this firsthand, because when you told me on a night out in Ramsey, and it was Halloween, everyone was dressed up, and the woman behind the bar thought it was stuck on. And I ended up having to pull it to prove to her that it wasn't. So I'd have to go for Pippers, because Vinnie uses mascara on it, so it's a fake.
Did you clock Jack Saxon's the other week in the semi-final against you guys?
Yeah, I don't think Andy Perry seen that the other day.
That was some strike though, wasn't it?
Sorry, and
go on in. What's this mystery question?
It's not too much of a mystery, but Frank, any idea where my leather jacket is?
We're still looking for that. We had the harbour dredge the other week.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I think Sean Quay's got it, you know.
He denies it.
He blames you.
Yeah.
Well, he just moved house, so he's not come round, and I'm in the middle of moving house, so if I come by it, I'll drop it into you.
We may have melted on the radio. You took it home.
We'll try and get it. When's the Systems Cup start?
September. Yeah, good.
Dave will be back as lucky charm.
Oh, God.
Probably won't fit, you know.
I know, it's like a tent on me. I'm putting it back on now, so...
Right, guys, thanks for coming in. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been great. Good luck on Sunday. And good luck, of course, over the summer, Northern Cyprus, Scotland. Clocking up the air miles, as always, Lee and Frank.
Thanks very much.
Good. Yeah, thanks
for having us, boys. Enjoyable.
Remember, you can tweet us day or night at Manx40blog. Last week, the next week's the last week.
Oh, God, it's here already.
It's a cup presentation special, I think.
I can't believe we haven't been kicked off the air before now.
Well, you know, we haven't had any legal-looking letters, so I'm going to press ahead. Right, you can find all the podcasts at audioboom.com/channel/ManxFootball, or, of course, they're on the iTunes. Right, till next week.
Ta-ta for now.